This is a presentation of the Trine Broadcasting Network, part of the Center for Sports Studies at Trine University. Learn more at trine.edu.
Welcome to the Center for Sports Studies podcast. My name is Brandon Podgorski, professor of sport management at Trine University, and I want to welcome you to this week's podcast. On today's podcast, I am joined by the operations manager for the Chicago Blackhawks, Morgan Patrico. In her role with the Blackhawks, Morgan is responsible for the day-to-day and strategic operations of the Blackhawks Practice Center, Fifth Third Arena. After a career in college athletic administration, Morgan now applies her skills into managing and developing her team, scheduling events at the arena, and assisting in long-term strategies for the arena's expansion. In this episode, Morgan reflects on her career journey, how being available to do anything and everything in sports helped her along the way, and she also talks about the trade-offs of working in sports. I hope you enjoy the show. Okay, joining us on the Center for Sports Studies podcast today, we have the operations manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, Morgan Patrico, joining us. Morgan, thank you so much for joining the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm excited, and I hadn't shared this yet, but and I promise I didn't bring you on the show because of this, but I am a Blackhawks fan, but we're going to just shelve that for right now. So I promise that's not why you're here. But as we talked a little bit about before the show started, I'm excited to have you because you're in operations, and operations can mean so many different things in sport. And we have students who are interested in getting into that career. So I want to talk about that today, just about your background and experience and what you're doing now with the Blackhawks. So let's start with that. You know, what is your background in sports, and what do you do for the Blackhawks?
Sure. I'll kind of start with what I do my day to day. So for the Blackhawks, I'm a manager for Fifth Third Arena, which is the practice home and facility of the Chicago Blackhawks. So they're housed here about 98% of the time. The only time they're not here is when they're on the road or they're playing games over at the United Center, whom they share with the Bulls, as well as a concert venue. So the most of the time they're here, which is nice because their practices are open to the public, which is pretty rare for professional sports team to have their practices open to the public. But it's a great fan experience point for our fans here in Chicago. But what's unique about our facility is we're not just the practice home for the Blackhawks. We're also a community ice rink. So we're open every day from 5:30 in the morning to 1 a.m. with anything and anything you can imagine, from youth hockey initiatives, figure skating initiatives, public events, as well as leagues for kids and adults as well. So we have everything and anything in between, and we're booked solidly, like I said, every day from 5:30 to 1. And we're just a big operation right now of two ice sheets in the middle of downtown Chicago. And we're just trying to grow the game of hockey here, as well as figure skating, just because it's not as popular in Illinois as it is in your northeastern states. Mm-hmm. We grow the game of hockey, but also grow our brand as well. My path, I'd say, in sports, just like everyone else, I'm a little bit unique. I've kind of been, as you saw probably from my resume, I've been kind of around in a different ways. Majority of my background's in collegiate athletics. I went to Adrian College. It's a small Division III school right on the Michigan-Ohio border. I was an equestrian student athlete there. I actually started off as an athletic training major and switched out about midway through my junior year, realized it wasn't the path for me. Kind of switched to sport management, and I was late in the game. I remember one of my professors was like, you need to get and drive if you want to graduate and have a good job. And so I took a couple minor league jobs working in minor league sports, AAA mm-hmm. baseball, collegiate baseball, not the greatest of jobs, but definitely I think gave me a lot of grit to be who I am today, and gave me a lot of like my background to kind of help propel me in sports and realize, you know, I can do this. If I was able to pull a tarp on the field in the rain, I can do anything in this world.
Yep.
My first stop was at Purdue University. I was a development consultant there, simply meaning I raised funds for their athletic funding. What was unique about Purdue is their whole athletic department receives no funding from the state or from their school. So it's solely funded on donors, which is really rare in the country. Was there for a little while, but realized I kind of wanted to be more with the student athletes. I was not really a fan of the cold calling. It was mm-hmm. a lot, it took a lot out of me, but I really wanted to work with more student athletes, work with more admin, and work with the teams more. From there, I had a really unique opportunity to join the University of Michigan track and field and cross country staff. With there, I was their essentially director of ops and head of recruiting. So I helped them with all their recruiting, but also helped them with all their travel. People don't realize, you know, you think Michigan, you think these teams are traveling by charter. No, for track and field and cross country, we're like a lower level team. So we're taking commercial everywhere we go, but it's hard. Think about traveling 60 people commercial, getting their point A, point B, getting their hotels. I mean, most of our meets out of town, either California, Florida, warmer states, because track in Michigan, you know, you can get anything and anything in March and April, you know, so we're not playing in our home turf until about May. From there, I kind of took a little bit of a hiatus, not out of sports, but I realized I wanted to grow more as an admin. Kind of the trend in sports was admins had master's degrees. A lot of people were looking for masters. So I took a unique opportunity to go down to Walt Disney World, where they paid for my master's in full, which is a really unique opportunity. I never saw a bill from them. Super thankful. Was down there during COVID. Started in sports, but COVID kind of changed my career path so that way I can stay employed. And I ended up being a horse trainer, but got to open a multi-million-dollar equestrian facility with Walt Disney and kind of grow as a leader there. So once I graduated, I was ready to get back in the sports game. But I knew, you know, I needed a job that was going to really excel me, propel me, and really prepare me, because this is going to be, you know, a greatest career move. To where I moved up to Central Michigan University before I came to the Blackhawks. First, I served as the executive assistant to our athletic director, where I continue to serve, but I also was promoted to the assistant athletic director of administration and strategic initiatives. Essentially served as our chief of staff, right underneath our athletic director. Still was, like I said, her executive assistant, but also was a sport administrator for cross country, track, and football with the AD as well. So definitely was one of the biggest, I think, growths in my career, but definitely was the job I learned the most from being in that realm. And from them, you know, college athletics is right now in a very changing phase. There's a lot going on. And from there, I've had the opportunity to move to the Blackhawks, where this is kind of my first realm in the professional sports era.
So much there we can unpack. But I think one of the interesting things you kind of talked about earlier, I mean, you're running this facility that's not just home. And I'm assuming when I say home, like home to the Blackhawks, you know, we kind of think, hey, they kind of live at the stadium, but a lot of everything kind of goes on at the practice facility. So I'm assuming, is that where like their athletic trainers and nutritionists, psychologists, everybody is where you're
Everybody's here. So they're, like I say, their training gym's here. Main locker room is here. You know, their kitchen, their everything you see is all out of here. The only thing they have in the United Center is a locker room. And like I said, they're only going over there on game days. They'll do their morning skates over there, but otherwise we'll see them here 24/7.
Wow. So with that, you want to keep this place busy. So how big of a staff are you managing or people there trying to work this thing from 5:30 to 1 a.m?
I mean, we have anywhere from about 15 to 30 people on staff every day, full-time, part-time, kind of everything in between. Think about it. There's a lot that goes into this. Security's here 24/7. This is their practice home and all their stuff is here. And we have people who have to run the front desk. They're kind of like the point, you know, I call it like the heart of the operation. They're the information, the knowledge, you know, they're reaching people who have been here for the first time and trying to grow them, you know, as a customer, as a fan of the Blackhawks. And then we also have people who are, you know, repeat customers, but how can we grow their experience here as well? And kind of, you know, get them to, you know, pass our word off, you know, to come here, you know, whether it's to a practice, whether it's to a drop-in session that we have. And we have everything kind of in between. We have our ice technicians team who have to be taking care of the ice because it is getting chewed up every hour on the hour. So we have to make sure it's at its top condition for the Blackhawks when they're here on practice days. And then we kind of have every other position in between. We host events here, you know, everything from a birthday party, corporate events, you know, you name it, we probably have done it some way, shape, or form. But what's nice is on the Blackhawks side, we are able to use their spaces for our events. So we can kind of really bring that customer experience from our events team, you know, to bring high caliber events in the Blackhawks spaces. You know, how many times can you say I did an event and was able to show my clients the Blackhawks locker room?
Yeah.
You know, we have really different and cool, unique opportunities here.
You know, people can actually come in and see them practice, which I got to imagine is kind of a cool selling point along with that. You talked about security in the facility. So how does that work? Because I know teams are so like secretive or protective is a better word, protective of what it is that they're doing. Can fans like actually be in the the arena, the stands, yep, and hear everything going on?
Yeah, it's such an amazing experience. And I didn't know this until I got here. You know, our fans are as close to the ice as they can be. They can, wow, hear everything going on in practice. You can see, you know, Connor Bedard's our number one draft pick here in the Blackhawks. He's done a tremendous job helping, you know, grow our fan base, you know, grow everything here, and even grow the NHL. But you can get up close and personal with all of our athletes. And it's awesome because sometimes they'll try to make that fan interaction if they can. And it's nice because sometimes fans can't afford to go to games. You know, you look at, you know, ticket pricing and everything going on, but you can come here and still get that kind of game experience and that Blackhawks experience here. And it's free. It's free, open to the public. They go on for about 3 hours a day, which is really nice. And it really drives home that fan experience.
Wow, that's incredible. So you gave kind of an overview of everything that happens there at the Fifth Third Center. What are your day-to-day responsibilities as the operations manager?
I help a lot, you know, with our, you know, staff at the front desk, making sure that they're up to date on knowledge, everything going on that's happening. I help a lot with our scheduling. As you can imagine, scheduling two sheets of ice and making sure that there's no double booking of clients, making sure there's proper ice cuts in there, making sure the client gets everything that they need. So taking a look at that, but I also do a lot of looking at data, taking a look at, you know, what drop-in programs have been successful, what times have been successful, how can I, you know, we might do a drop-in program at 9 a.m. and we're not seeing success. So if I shift it to 8:30, does it make a difference so people can get here before work? What unique programs and opportunities can I bring to Fifth Third Arena? What's unique is we are actually expanding. We are right now a two-rink facility, and we're expanding to two more sheets of ice by 2026. Okay. So we'll be a four-sheet facility, one of the only four sheets in the nation. And one of those sheets is going to be a mini arena. So right now we're preparing what clients can we bring, because we want to fill and be successful that we are with two sheets to four sheets. One of my biggest projects has been, you know, we've never touched the collegiate scene here at Third Arena, which how many, you know, Division III athletes would love to play their championship game,
yep,
at an NHL facility. I mean, you just don't see it. I think they'd rather play it than at another D3 facility. And we're like a neutral site, and we can, yep, bring them that Division I experience, Frozen Four experience than anyone else can, you know, and bring it as close as we can to give them that student athlete experience so that they'll remember this for a lifetime. So kind of trying to tap into that and see how we can bring it. We have applied for two NCAA championships in the future. So we're hoping that this may be, you know, a potential partnership in the future, and just kind of what other unique opportunities have we not touched here that we can bring now and bring in the future?
Wow. So hockey is alive and well in Chicago, yes, and everything that goes along with it, you know, here at Trine. We've got three men's teams, an NCAA team, two varsity team, women's hockey team, and then also skating. So we've already kind of outgrown that one sheet of ice. So I kind of understand where you're coming from. And just, I think we're seeing a growth. I mean, that's completely anecdotal. And maybe it's because I'm here at Trine in Northeast Indiana and I see it. But it feels like hockey's growing. It feels like there's so many opportunities to get involved. Like you said, even at the collegiate level, at a D3, if you can't go to a Minnesota or North Dakota or whatever it would be. So that's great to see the Blackhawks investing in that. And are the Blackhawks the one who own the ice? Is it owned by the city? What's that look like?
The Blackhawks own this building. We do work a lot in a collaboration with the city. Our community team with the Blackhawks also works with youth groups, youth initiatives. We bring in a lot of schools who may not have the opportunity to ever ice skate in their life, play hockey in their life. We bring them here as well. So we're more than, I think, a community ice rink in that aspect. But essentially, the Blackhawks do own it. And own everything. And we kind of help promote the brand. And again, helping promote hockey in not only Chicago, but also in the nation as well.
I think as students might listen to this, they're going to be really interested in what you're doing. Again, I got a lot who say they kind of want to get into operations. Maybe now they've got a little bit about better idea what that is. I mean, so much of that is kind of management and leadership and being strategic and working with multitude of different partners. How do you think your past experience, because like you said, it was varied and maybe wasn't like a kind of a linear path like a lot of people might have. How do you think that helped? Because I'm kind of looking at everything you did, and while it might not be like, okay, you started as an operations intern and then just worked your way up, I think you probably have such a varied experience that there's probably not a lot being thrown at you that you're like, I could handle that.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, when I worked in track and especially now working in hockey, I did not have any background in any of those. I, you know, I have general knowledge of the sports, but no background. And I think it's just a willingness to learn and a willingness to be creative are two huge factors that have played in my jobs and kind of helping me get here. Because if you're creative, you know, you're looking at how can we change the business? What things can we try? Can we being able to accept failure, you know? Not everything you try is going to be perfect. You know, we try things all the time here. You know, how can we change something? Is it going to work? I don't know. We're going to give it a shot, but we may fail. And what can we learn from it? You know, I think you just have to be open, willingness to learn, you know, being able to, you know, learn new things, take a look at the industry. You know, I reach out to professionals all the time on LinkedIn. Like, what are, how have you ever dealt with these struggles and what's something that you would suggest to move forward? And I think a lot of people take that for granted because there's so many people in this industry, and whether you're reaching out to someone in basketball, hockey, anything, they may be able to solve your challenges that you may not be able to think of creative ideas because you've kind of ran out.
I love that. You know, talking in, with people who are in your industry, and what I found in sport, and I'm going to assume you would agree, is that people are always willing to help. You know, yep. There's so many things going on in sport, but it's a pretty small industry. Yes. And everybody kind of knows each other. So what about the lessons of failure? How much do you think that's played into your career to where, oh, maybe I had this great idea, or, you know, I'm learning this new skill. I mean, it's not necessarily inherent. Okay, we got to get 60 flights and hotel rooms and food, you know, for a week. Has that played a part in just kind of learning from that and being able to grow as well?
I think, yes, I would definitely say so. I mean, just being able, like, you got to think some of these jobs I've had, like, I'm coming in not as an expert, but I'm showing my willingness to learn, to want to be there, working hard, being one of the first ones in and the last ones out. Like, I tell people, this industry, if you're expecting a 9-to-5 job, you might as well leave now because it's not going to happen. But just, you know, I always say, be ready to expect the unexpected. I love to tell the story at CMU. We were expected to play a bowl game in Arizona, got on the flight, got there. Sure enough, our bowl opponent dropped due to COVID. In Texas, about 6 hours away, Sun Bowl, their opponent also dropped due to COVID. And we wanted to play a game. We wanted to play a bowl game, and one of us had to move. And sure enough, the Sun Bowl was the more prestigious bowl out of the two. Mm-hmm. And so we had to move an entire operation that planned on playing a team in Arizona all the way to Texas. And you can't plan for that. There's nothing in life that would have prepared me for that. And you kind of felt like, failure could happen anywhere in this, you know, you're having to now rebook all the food, all the events, all the activities. Now we have to change the busing. Now we have to change our charter. You know, that whole trip from a staffing kind of point, it felt like a failure because you felt like, man, I just misbooked everything, but you didn't, you know, it's kind of having to, you know, be ready, jump in, you know, what can we learn? You know, we learned as a team, we're very good if we work together. And that's how we moved over 200 people from Arizona to Texas. Like, that's not an easy feat. And we did it in less than 24 hours. And we had to make sure that we prepared our teams and our coaches that, you know what, now you're going to be playing a team that you haven't even scouted. You have less than 48 hours to scout. And you know what, at this point, we're just going to go and play. And to be honest, I think what ended this game, I always tell the story, is we ended up beating a Power 5 team. Mm-hmm. I think they also didn't expect to play us. And we came in, you know, guns are running because we were like, you know what, we're here, ready to play our bowl. Now we're playing in the Sun Bowl. And what can we lose at this point? And we won. And it was just that moment, you know, you expect the unexpected, you know, be prepared to learn. There's going to be failure, but you know what, how can we bounce on one another, bounce on other people? I think a lot of people also in industry, they want to be siloed. They want to work alone. Yeah. As a leader, I love teamwork. I love working with others, other departments. How can we bounce ideas off? You know, how can you grow my idea to make it bigger and better? And in the Sun Bowl instance, you know, how can I lean on my coworkers who are here to to help us get through this. You know, as one person, I can't, our travel guy was like, I don't even know where to start, Morgan, and you may have the most travel experience. So is how can we bounce on another? You know, can I give Zach a project? Can I give Brendan a project? You know, giving everyone little projects so that way we can succeed and we can move a whole team across the country. So essentially this job with failure, you know, sometimes you got to expect the unexpected. You're going to fail at times, but what can you learn from those experiences to help you grow so you can be prepared? And I always say, you know, the following year, you're going to love this. We had a charter cancel on us about 2 minutes before the game ended in Oklahoma State, and we were stranded.
Oh, geez.
But I was like, I told our AD, I'm like, this is a cakewalk for me. I'll just start calling hotels because I'm at least not having to move 200 people over a state border. You know, this is easy. And it was one of those easy tasks because I was there and knew what to do. But it was, how can you apply these situations? You'll end up applying them in the future.
Wow. Unreal. Yeah. I remember when I was coaching at JUCO down in Southwest Georgia, we were on a road trip, and like halfway into our road trip of like 2 hours, our bus broke down. And so then you scramble because there's nobody else to help. So like you said, you just figure it out. So, you know, I think I might know the answer, but you're the only one who can actually know the real answer on this. So when you were interviewing for these jobs, particularly in sport, and okay, I might not have a background in this, how were you able to sell yourself and let people know? Because I'm hearing that, hey, I'm willing to do anything. I understand it's nights, it's weekends, it's holidays. I know how to galvanize people. I think those are really strong things for students to understand when they're interviewing for these types of jobs.
First off, it's growing your relationship with your bosses and your manager and your coworkers so that they're going to see how hard of a worker you are, because you don't know when you're interviewing who they're going to call because who they don't know. And I think that has spoken a lot to when I've been interviewing, because, you know, they've called my boss, Amy, the AD at CMU. And Amy's like, this girl will do anything. You tell her to go throw t-shirts because marketing's short for a day, Morgan will be there to do it. I think, you know, applying everything I had on my resume, people look at it. I mean, if I'll send it to you. And so your students can see, they look and they're like, how did you, you know, breathe?
Right.
And I think it's, you know, just explaining, you know, you'll look and see I've done school full time while also working, but I know how to prioritize. And just being able to essentially know that I am willing to do whatever it takes in this industry. You know, I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to grow. I hope you're going to be a manager that's going to support me along the way. But just understand that I may fail because I don't understand hockey as much, but I'm going to learn as much as I can. You know, can you provide me the resources so I can learn and grow in this industry? And I think that's what's been super successful at most of my jobs, because people have taken chances knowing that I'm a hard worker, knowing I have a good set of tools in my toolkit as a person and as a leader, but knowing that I'm willing to learn and grow to be successful and to make sure that whichever organization I'm in, I'm going to take it as far as I can and make it the most successful I can before I leave.
And that is fantastic advice. And it's always nice to hear from a professional, because I know they get tired of hearing it from me after 4 years. But, you know, I think to your point, there are trade-offs. And working in the world of sport, I know there's amazing opportunities you've had. I'm going to ask you about that. But you might miss out on some of those holidays or, you know, some of those other things, being able to go with friends. But as you think about those trade-offs, what are like some of your greatest memories or greatest wins that you've had in your career?
First off, the bowl trip. That was one of the greatest wins that I talked about.
Oh, yeah. Just
being able to get through that. I mean, that's one memory I'll have for the rest of my life. I would been on two opening teams of two multi-million-dollar facilities, one at the University of Michigan, one even at Walt Disney World. But just being there through the process of the plans, the opening, and also being there for the failure right after the opening, you know, what's not working that we expected it to work, you know, what's something that we didn't think about, but now that we need, and how can we, you know, figure it out, or do we need to reconstruct something now with the team, construction teams, before they did that final sign off? I think a biggest win for me also is I've done my master's while working full time, and I'm currently in law school working full time in sports.
Wow.
And that's just something, I think it just is a testament to my grit right now. You know, my friends, I tell them I don't have a lot of time, but when I do, I'll make it as much as I can. But I'm working those more than 40 hours a week, but I'm also trying to do law school and I'm trying to graduate here within a year, which is a pretty tough feat. But when I do it, I think that's going to be one of the most challenging things right now that I've ever had to accomplish. And I think lastly, a great win I had is I got to speak at the National Collegiate Athletic Directors Association conference on a panel with some of the greatest sport administrators in the country. And just being able to speak to, you know, to people in this generation at this conference was such an amazing accomplishment for me. But I also got to learn from the people I was on stage with, you know, Sarah Baumgartner, she does all of sports administration for Texas. We had someone from Oklahoma State. We had someone from Cal. Just being able to learn from them. And I was just a lone person at CMU, the lowest school, you know, out of the three. But being able to be on stage with them and be able to talk about my experiences was something I'll never forget as well.
So we can kind of go down that line. You know, you've worked in college athletics. Now you're in professional athletics. What have been some of the similarities and differences? I've got to have a foot in both worlds a little bit as well as an AD and athletic administrator in college. And then I've worked a little bit in pro sports, not as much, but I always felt college athletics, it was so rule-based before I would make any decision. I would have to like triple check and make sure that I'm not going to get us in compliance trouble, even just with little things. Yeah. Pro athletics, you know, there was certainly more of a spotlight and things started to move a little bit faster, but just kind of interested in your experience.
Sure. I'll kind of talk about the differences first. Kind of you touched on them. You know, in pro sports, I'm not having to deal with the transfer portal, conference realignment. I don't have parents calling me about playing time. Couldn't imagine you know, at the Blackhawks, but you know, those are two topics, especially conference realignment, the transfer portal, that are huge right now in collegiate athletics. They're not really finalized. They're going to change in the next 5 years. Yeah. I mean, you're already looking at, you know, is it going to become the Big Ten versus the SEC? Yeah. And that's a question I don't have, but it's kind of trending towards that way. Especially with the opening of the college football playoffs to more teams. Basketball, I've heard, may potentially open up more, even though it's already a big pool. But I'm kind of looking at what's going to happen to those little Division I schools like Central Michigan. Yep. You know, we play right now two football games every year that are worth a money value. Are those going to be going away? But those are money that goes towards our budget every year. You know, and it's not a cheap dollar. It's almost over $1 million each game. So what's going to happen if those games get taken away? Because now the college football playoff, they're going to look at strength of schedule. So now they're not going to, I always say, you know, they always say Alabama, you know, puts on their schedule cupcake teams, you know, because they just want all those wins. But now they're going to look at that and be like, your strength of schedule is going to be the lowest. And that might be a deciding factor on getting somebody out. So is it going to wreck the Division I model? I'm not sure. You know, what I think they might do is take the top 100 teams and kind of maybe push the rest to Division II. They may be more successful there money-wise, but if you take a look at like CMU's budget versus Michigan State or the University of Michigan, it's nuts. You can't even compare. So how, you know, these Central Michigan teams, the MAC schools, the ASUNs, the American Conference, you know, they really either have to put in a lot more funding to be able to be successful, or they might fall off. And it's not even due to the transfer portal, but that conference realignment. But also now the transfer portal is playing a piece with NIL. NIL is still not settled out either, because now all these people, they just want to, all these student athletes want to go where the money is. Yeah. They don't want to go where, back in my day, like, we just wanted to go to play. We wanted to be a student athlete. We didn't care about the money value. We just wanted an education, and we wanted the best that we can get, when also to be play a sport that we love and grow with our teammates. I think just the whole model itself is changing, where I don't see that in professional hockey. You know, you get signed to a team, and here, you know, it's a little bit different, because with the Chicago Blackhawks, it's amazing to see the effect that our players and our team have. You know, we were one of the first eliminated out of the playoffs. Our record, you can see, is not that great, but we're selling out almost every single home game that we have here. And we're the third highest in attendance in the league. Wow. And it's one of those, like, how can you explain that? And it's a testament to our team, you know, our players that we have, our coaches, our values, and our culture here, that's what Chicago loves. You know, we have one of the best attendance in all Chicago sports. And it's just something you're not seeing also at the collegiate level, when they're having a hard time filling seats at a lot of their games and having to make a lot of their games, you know, a free sport because it's just the cost of, you know, expenses is not equaling to the cost of revenue. Sorry, yeah. That was a little long-winded answer there.
No, there's so much good stuff. And we could probably spend another couple hours talking about that. I remember when I was an AD at an NAIA school and I got to go to NACTA. Wow, this has been 10 years ago. And there were even whispers then of, you know, kind of that Autonomous Five breaking off and maybe doing their own thing. I think we're getting closer and closer and closer to that becoming a reality. And I don't know what happens with the NCAA at that point. But I mean, no, you hit on that. I think that's another skill that students are going to need to have is, you know, if you're going to go to a CMU or even kind of something a little bit lower, you know, a low major, you're going to have to be creative in revenue development. And that's knocking on a lot of doors and calling a lot of people. So I know we're starting to run a little bit short on time, but I did want to ask, as an administrator in sport, you're dealing with a lot of kind of very A type of personalities, things need to get done kind of at the speed of business. How do you deal with that? Because you also have staff who, like you said, are also part-time and just kind of there, you know, working the front desk and things. So how do you kind of balance working with like those kind of really demanding personalities and some of those personalities that, you know, I'm managing, I'm cultivating and I'm developing them?
I always tell people the biggest thing I've learned of being in a manager is growing people's trust. That's the biggest relationship piece. As an administrator, you'll look at the difference between how I talk to my football coach and how I talk to the track and field coach were very two different personalities because I got to know them as people, got to know how they coached, but also build that trust and relationship piece with them. So that way I can help them and be able to help them in any kind of situation. It's also with being with the student athletes, it's growing the trust, but it's also being empathetic. You know, they're going to come to you and confide to you in situations, whether it's about their coach, what's going on, you know, it's their first time at home, but especially even with some of my part-time workers here, you know, they're students in college. This is their first time job, you know. How can I, you know, be a good leader to them? And I think how I lead and how I've led other people in this industry, you'll realize it's all different just based on getting to know somebody as an individual first, kind of what their needs are, what kind of they may struggle with, but how can I grow them, but also just gain their trust as a person. You know, I think it takes a lot to be an empathetic leader, to show empathy towards people. But it's also just, it helps them be able to trust you and be able to grow with you as well.
No, I completely agree. Like empathy is just it's a really great thing to have kind of in your tool belt as a leader. So as we wrap up, what advice might you have for students who want to, I could say break into sport, but specifically want to get into operations and do what you do where, you know, hey, I'm not interested in sales. I don't like being on the phone, which is where a lot of students are kind of pushed. But I really kind of want to do the operations, the day in, day out, get my hands dirty. How can they do that?
I always tell people three things. The first one is sometimes your first job, don't chase the logos. Don't chase the brands. Yeah. You know, try to find those jobs that are going to give you the best experience. You know, your first job will probably not be your last job in sports. But if you take a look at, you know, my first two jobs, Purdue and Michigan, there wasn't a lot of growth for me to be promoted there. CMU, I just kept going up till I couldn't go up anymore. Sometimes you can find that with those, you know, big names, big flashy names, but also you're going to grow the most sometimes at these lower level institutions, and you're going to get opportunities that you can't get anywhere else. Like I did at CMU, you know, Michigan and Purdue, I was so siloed in one department, or CMU, I was all over the map. So I always say, don't chase the logos. If you can start at a lower level job, you're going to grow the most, the minor leagues, especially, you're going to learn everything and anything. And you're going to be, you know, a force of fire coming into the industry as a young professional. Another thing I always like to give, I always say educate yourself daily. I take about 10 minutes a day. I read 5 minutes of news of what's going on in the world and 5 minutes of what's going on in sports. There's so much going on. As you said, I swear compliance rules change on the daily, but I just take 5 minutes a day. I read the D1 ticker, just seeing what's going on in college. You know, what are some trends that people are seeing? I'm starting to try to see if I can find the sports outlet for professionals, but what topics are we seeing? So that way I can prepare if they do come to the Blackhawks, or, you know, how can I prepare as ahead of the game if we ever do face the challenges that I'm seeing my peers in the industry face? And lastly, I think a lot of people say this, but network in this industry, you know, network with people with jobs that you think you might want, but also network with people that jobs you may be interested, may not be interested, because we love to share our experiences, but you may realize quick, yep, marketing's not for me. Yep, operations is not for me. So kind of meet with professionals in this industry, pro, minor leagues, collegiate, and kind of find that right niche for you.
That's all great advice. And Morgan, really appreciate you joining us today and giving some great guidance for our students. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Be sure to check out our next episode on April 15th as we talk with the 37-year CFO of the Indianapolis Colts, Kurt Humphrey. As always, we'd like to say a special thank you to producer Josh Hornbacher for his work behind the scenes. This is the Center for Sports Studies podcast, broadcasting from the Trine Broadcasting Network. If you like this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Center for Sports Studies podcast on your favorite podcasting platform and give us a 5-star rating if you like what you heard. For more information about the Center for Sports Studies, please visit trine.edu. Also, be sure to like the Trine Center for Sports Studies on Facebook, follow us on Instagram and X at TrineCSS, and subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Thanks for listening to this presentation of the Trine Broadcasting Network, part of the Center for Sports Studies at Trine University. Learn more at trine.edu.